Blog Talk Radio.
Whoa, good evening and welcome to Eerie House Oldie Tiny Radio. I'm Dale Too Cheap to Tip K from Spook Show. You're along with
Dave sticking my thumb out heading west, Binkley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here along with
greetings and felicitations. This is CW, who is looking to grab a ride, summer ride on the Munster Mobile. Where is
there
it?
There you go.
Waiting
and,
for you.
We're also joined by, in the chat at least, good old Bob and Fogsbane, who just wrote down one of my favorite movie quotes, and it's from Creepshow 2, which involves something of a hitchhiker, sort of. Thanks for the ride, lady. Remember that one where the guy, where the lady's cheating on her husband and she's hurrying up to get home and she kills this hitchhiker? And then the hitchhiker's corpse begins to haunt her. Like she's driving her car like through the woods to get away from it. And he keeps coming back more and more destroyed by this car. Thanks for the ride, lady. Anybody remember that one besides me and Fogsbane?
I think I'm not. It's not ringing a bell, but it's sort of reminiscent of that episode of Snapped, where the wife runs over the husband a couple of times, ruins her brand new TV. But
a couple of times, just to make sure, you know, grind it in there.
Just to make sure.
Yeah. Leave no job half done. Especially when running over
well.
A spouse. Ex-spouse.
Oh, ah, there you are.
Anyway, this is not a how-to, gang. Just a little levity. A little comedy. There you go. Fog's being posted. A link for IMDb of Creepshow 2. Almost as good as Creep... In some ways, I think surpasses Creepshow 1. Very much in the horror host genre, presented much like the old DC comics. It had a creepy host.
Right. Yes, and it actually has the comic pages flipping through, does it not?
Yeah. Yes, and I actually still have my Creepshow, my original Creepshow they sold at the theaters. It was like, I guess you'd call it a graphic novel. It wasn't comic book size. It was big. It was more of a cardboard, cover. Almost like a soft-bound book, it was the comic panel telling of all the stories in Creepshow, which I think they used some of in the movie for segues and such. It had a wraparound story, and then it was an anthology deal with, segments of creepy tales, Creepshow and Creepshow 2. Well worth the watch, in my humble opinion. For what it's worth.
And that is quite humble.
Yep. For what it's worth, and that ain't much. My opinion is meaningless even to me. Jeez.
Wow.
God.
If you are thinking of Hitching, remember the late Rutger Hauer, he did the movie, the thriller, The Hitcher?
God, that's been for ages since I've seen that. I've got to pull that one on, dust that one off.
Yep, Jennifer Jason Leigh is in there, and C. Thomas Howell is also in that movie.
Not to be confused with Thurston.
Not Thurston Howell the third.
No. Nope, and then, of course, the classic Twilight Zone episode. Going My Way. Another hitchhiker tale. But we got three for in radio for you.
Yeah, we do. We've got some Boston Blackie and some K Facebook and Gregory Hoodie and some
quiet, please. Quiet, please. Yep. All three tonight. Somebody's hitchhiking out there. I heard him.
Uh-oh. Yeah. I don't think it was mine this time, but you never know. I'm right by the window, so.
Could have been me.
Just for a quick step back to that Creepshow 2 episode that Fogsbane referenced, the violence is so impactful. It's almost comical. It's almost comical, and I think by design.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that dark comedy.
I love dark comedy. And you can have a lot of that in Hitchhikers. And don't forget, we had that radio tale. Wasn't that weren't they originally Hitchhikers, the one that had that suspense that had Gracie, George and Gracie in it, I think? Hey, or am I mixing up something here?
Oh, the Fibber McGee and Molly.
Or Fibber McGee and Molly, that's who it was, yes.
Yeah.
It was sort of a Hitchhiker tale.
Called Backseat Driver, yes.
Yeah.
At the archives, you can find it right there. An amazing tale for, it really shows you the range, and I think more than Molly trying to hang on to her little Irish accent there, the range that Jim Jordan had from some of the stuff he did, and because he and Marion had sung, started off kind of singing on radio, then joined some vaudeville type stuff just because to bring money in before they hit the big time with their the Smackouts, and then bigger with McGee and Molly. So, yeah, amazing his range.
If you're a huge Fibber McGee and Molly fan, it is surprising to hear Jim Jordan's other performances, particularly that suspense episode I was referencing.
Yeah, I have another one I found that they did on the family, the family. I forget what that is show, but they did a performance on that as well, and he was absolutely amazing in that. His range is much better than I think anybody gives him credit for.
Well, we're gonna give him all the credit we can, posthumously, but hey, it's credit nonetheless.
Oh, as Molly was always fond of saying, heavenly days.
Yep, heavenly days. Yes, which was the title of their second movie.
Yep. And it was fun. Well, where shall we start with our radio fun tonight? We haven't had Gregory Hood in a while. Shall we open up the casebook?
We hadn't. Well, let's open up the casebook. This is the very first episode. Pilot episode, shall we say, of Casebook of Gregory Hood. One of the performances. Well, actually, early on, Gail Gordon did a lot of straight roles. It wasn't until he started appearing in things like Fibber McGee and Molly as the Mayor of Latrivia and Foggy the Weatherman that he really started getting noticed for comedic roles. But here he is Gregory Hood. This was a summer replacement for the Sherlock Holmes, the same sponsor and everything, that with about Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. This was the summer replacement.
Basil.
Yep.
Basil. Yes.
A great title to this pilot episode of Casebook of Gregory Hood, The Three Silver Pencils.
Yep. And it comes to us, episode number one. It comes to us from... was this June 3rd of 1946.
Petri Wine brings you The Casebook of Gregory Hood.
And the Ghost.
Tonight, the Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to the story of... The Three Silver Pesos, another exciting story from the Casebook of Gregory Hood. And I'd like to invite you to try something that will turn those impatient minutes you spend waiting for dinner to be served into a time you really look forward to. You can do that by pouring yourself a glass of Petri California Sherry. Yes, sir, just sit back and enjoy that Petri Sherry. Good, it's great. Just hold that glass of Petri Sherry to the light and notice the beautiful deep amber color, clear as crystal. Get the aroma of this fine wine. It has all the fragrance of the luscious, sun-ripened grapes from which it's made. But wait till you taste that Petri Sherry. Then I can stop talking because you'll know for yourself how good it is. Oh, and say, if you like your sherry dry, you know, not sweet, Petri makes a delicious dry sherry. Petri Pale Dry. If you don't know which you prefer, so the regular sherry or the pale dry, why not try them both? Don't buy one, buy two. But just be sure you always buy Petri.
Petri, where is the Petri Village?
Well, it's Monday evening in San Francisco, and we have a date with Gregory Hood and his friend Sanderson Taylor. Our rendezvous tonight is at Gregory's apartment, high on Knob Hill and overlooking the San Francisco Bay. Let's keep our date, shall we?
Good evening, Mr. Battelle.
Hello, Kwong.
Mr. Hood expecting you. Mr. Taylor, I've already arrived. Please to go in, sir.
Thanks, Kwong.
Harry Bartell, how are you?
Hello, Sandy.
Glad to see you. Ah, good evening, Harry.
Evening, Gregory. Oh, please don't stop playing. That sounded swell.
Oh, you like it? Our first appearance on the radio, I thought I'd whip up a little number in honor of the occasion.
Oh?
Other radio shows have a musical theme. I thought this might be appropriate for ours.
So as well as being the head of Gregory Hood and Company Importers and an amateur detective, you're also a composer, huh?
In a very modest way, Harry.
How about you, Sandy? I know that you are Mr. Hood's attorney as well as his closest friend. Do you have any unusual talents you've been hiding under a bushel?
No, Harry, I'm a very dull dog compared to Gregory. I'm a good family man. I shoot an erratic game of golf, and I wield a writ of habeas corpus with moderate dexterity.
Don't believe a word he says, Harry. Sandy has many hidden talents, the fact that you'll find out as tonight's story gets underway. Would you care for a glass of sherry?
Oh, that'd be very nice, Gregory. Which particular page of the notebook have you decided to turn to for your first story?
A page that has the heading, The Case of the Three Silver Pesos.
We thought it was an adventure that would show you, Harry, that Gregory and I really don't go looking for trouble, though we do have an uncanny facility for meeting up with it.
And how did the three silver pesos catch up with you?
Well, it was about 6 o'clock one evening a few weeks ago that Sandy and I started our drive across the Bay Bridge, bound for Sandy's home in the Berkeley Hills. Little did we think that what promised to be an evening of pleasant domesticity was destined to turn into as wild and woolly an adventure as we had.
Bridge is beautiful in this light, isn't it, Gregory?
Stunning. Just the same, I missed the ferry boat.
Well, if you made the trip across as often as I do, you wouldn't. The bridge has knocked half an hour off the trip.
Even so, I...
Hey, look at that car. Why doesn't he stay in his own lane?
He's an oozer. They drive me crazy.
What's an oozer?
Plenty of them on the roads. When they change lanes, they never give a signal. They just ooze. What the devil is...
Watch out, Gregory. He's weaving from side to side.
Now he's pulling in toward the rail. He's going to stop.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to stop on the bridge.
He must be ill. I'm going to pull up behind him.
Well, look, he's opened the car door. Well, he's staggering toward the parapet.
This looks like a suicide attempt.
Come on, Sandy. Get away from that parapet.
Yes, that's too high a jump for you, my friend.
Sandy, help me hold him.
Right. There we are.
Say, who are you?
Gun. Gun.
Yes, yes, a gun would be simpler. Come on, get in our car. We'll see you home.
Gregory, I believe he's dead.
Get into the car. Poor devil, I suppose his heart gave him his wish. And get him to a doctor fast. We may be wrong. Oh, here comes a cop.
Hey! You can't stop on the bridge. Get moving.
We've got to get this man to a doctor, officer. He's seriously ill.
What about his car?
You get his car cleared off the bridge, officer. We'll call back when we get to the Oakland side and make our report.
Okay, get moving.
Gregory, I'm sure of it.
Did you find any identification on him?
According to his wallet, his name is Harrison Travers. and he's from Los Angeles.
Anything in his pocket?
A package of Chesterfield's, room key from the Hotel Barton.
Oh, that's one of those flea dumps on Turk Street. Huh. What else?
Three silver medals, oh.
What is it?
A small glass vial. It's empty. Gregory.
Hmm?
Smell it.
Good Lord, cyanide.
Do you suppose he swallowed it as he stepped out of the car?
Could be. As soon as we get across the bridge, we'll stop at the nearest doctor's and find out.
And that's our story, Dr. Arnold.
What explanation can you give, Doctor?
This is a fantastic case, gentlemen. You see that the man talked of the gun, carried an empty cyanide vial, tried to jump off the bridge, and apparently died of heart failure.
That's right, Doctor.
All very interesting, my friend. But this body happens to have been stabbed.
Stabbed?
What?
He died from a sharp instrument piercing the chest near the heart. This gentleman is murdered.
Back we head for the bridge to San Francisco with a corpse as a passenger. Hmm. Just at the time we should be having a martini.
Well, it's the only sensible thing to do, Gregory. The borderline between San Francisco and Alameda County runs right through the center of the bridge. The murder happened on the San Francisco side.
Hmm. So we hand a nice new corpse over to Lieutenant Magruder of Homicide, who hates me and probably won't believe a word we say.
Well, we can't take any chances, Gregory. We're mixed up in a murder case.
True, true. But Magruder will probably say the guy was stabbed to death in my arms. I'll have a heck of a job proving he wasn't. Magruder'd love to put the finger on me.
Now, Gregory, I'm not going to allow you to get mixed up in this any further.
But I am in it, Sandy, up to my chin. I've got to follow through to clear myself.
But Dr. Arnold made that stabbing business perfectly clear, Gregory. A man with such a wound might easily think it a mere scratch. He'll walk around for an hour before he drops dead. The police surgeon will understand.
I hope so. Did you call Mary?
Yes, yes. I said we'd be back by 7:30. It's all right.
I suppose you told her we just had to run a corpse back to the city.
Yes.
A wonderfully understanding girl, Mary.
When she knows I'm with you, Gregory, she's prepared for anything.
Oh.
Why are we stopping?
Don't you see the damsel in distress teetering on the curb ahead of us?
Damsel, nothing. Damsels don't thumb rides.
Oh, you must guard against being snobbish, Sandy.
Well, in any case, we've got a corpse in the rear.
Well, we'll say he's a bit under the weather. Hop in, young lady. There's room for three in front.
So, Walter Raleigh, I was beginning to think you'd never come along. Thanks. I'm Penelope. Penny for short.
My name's Taylor.
And mine's Hood.
What's wrong with your friend in the back?
Him?
Uh-huh.
Oh, he doesn't feel very well.
Stiff, huh? Oh, well, it's happened before.
Don't you think it's a little dangerous for young girls to hitch rides across the bridge?
Don't worry, Mr. Penny can take care of herself. I had a date at 7:15 and I just missed the train. I didn't want to wait.
Well, I'm sure you didn't have to wait long for a ride.
Mm-hmm, I didn't, but I'm choosy. Too many lone wolves on wheels.
And when we slowed down, Penny, I suppose the natural honesty of our expressions decided you that you'd be safe with us?
Say, you're pretty smooth. What's your other name, Mr. Hood?
Gregory.
I don't know how safe a girl would be with you, Gregory, but I bet you'd show her a good time.
I am reputed to have my moments, Penny.
Gregory, don't you think that with Mr. Travers in the back, it's rather...
Oh, my hat!
What happened, Penny?
Oh, it blew off. Please stop and let me out. It's brand new.
Oh, that's the trouble with these modern hats. They have no stamina. I'll go back and get it for you.
Watch the traffic, Gregory. Don't get out that side.
Oh, don't worry, Sandy. I never commit suicide on Mondays.
Here, climb out this way. I'll get out.
Just move over a little bit.
There we are.
That'll do. Thank you. I'll be back in a jiffy.
Your friend's nice. What does he do?
Do?
Hmm?
Why, he's in the importing business.
Oh, sounds so. Oh, look. Up there. Isn't that the Honolulu Clipper coming in?
I don't see it.
Goodbye, sucker.
What? Hey!
Well, I'll be...
Sandy, what happened?
Penny stole our car.
And our corpse. Sandy, Lieutenant Magruder's never going to believe this one.
And that's our story, Lieutenant Magruder.
And you're expecting me to believe it, I suppose.
What did I tell you, Sandy?
Listen, Mr. Hood. You're in the importing business. I keep my nose out of that kind of stuff. Why do you mix yourself up with a homicide case?
I didn't, Magruder. It mixed itself up with me.
Yeah, don't give me that. You think you're a hotshot detective. You're the smart boy who's always trying to show us up as a bunch of flatfoot. Don't waste my time.
Magruder, the San Francisco police force is one of the finest in the country. Why do you have to spoil the record? What do I have to do to make you realize there's been a murder?
Show me a murdered man.
But we had him. His corpse was in the stolen car.
Sure. And before he was stiff, you thought he was going to jump off the bridge. Then he had a heart attack. Then he was going to shoot himself. Then that he's poisoned himself. And finally, a doctor told you he'd been knifed. Yeah, and to cap it all off, a blonde babe steals your corpse and your car. Who are you trying to kid?
Well, I admit that it sounds unlikely, but it's true, Magruder.
Prove it.
Well, how about the traffic cop who came up to us on the bridge?
Yes. He drove the dead man's car way ahead of us.
He must have turned in a report.
Must he now? Well, I've checked the records, and there hasn't been a traffic report from the Bay Bridge since 4 o'clock. Now, what do you say, Mr. Hood?
That I'll prove it to you. Come on, Sandy.
Come back on Saturday, Mr. Hood. It's my day off.
You see how much your law-abiding instincts do for us, Sandy? Magruder doesn't believe us.
And see what your chivalrous instincts did for us. Your damsel in distress runs off with your car and the evidence.
Now we've got to follow this thing through to prove to Magruder that we're not nuts. You better call Mary and tell her it'll have to be a midnight snack.
Okay, Gregory, but I don't see where we go from here.
Luckily, I kept these three objects that were in the dead man's pocket. They're the only clues we've got.
A hotel key, an empty vial, and 3 silver pesos.
Yeah. Let's take the key first. Hotel Barton, room 207. All right, Sandy, that's our first port of call.
What a ghastly dump, Gregory.
But as you see, service with an alleged smile. Oh, good evening.
Wherefore?
I'm so glad. I hope you stay that way.
What do you want?
To see Mr. Harrison Travers.
No Travers here. Never was.
But this key.
207. Good. Glad to have it back. Stolen from us months ago. Thanks. Bye.
Who's living in that room?
I am. Good night.
Gregory, I'm beginning to think that Magruder was right, and that this whole business didn't happen after all.
And I'm getting as obstinate as all get out. I didn't believe that hotel clerk, but I couldn't search the room without a police warrant.
And with Magruder in his present frame of mind, that wouldn't be the easiest thing to get. Where are we headed for now?
The shop of my old friend Goldwasser. It's along here somewhere.
Well, how can he help us?
He's a coin dealer, the best in San Francisco. I want to ask him about these 3 silver pesos. Ah, here's his shop. Hello, Henry.
Gregory Herdman, dear boy, how good to see you.
This is Mr. Sanderson Taylor.
How do you do?
Mr. Goldwasser?
Come, let's go into my room at the back. We can sit down and be comfortable there.
How have you been, Henry?
Fine, Gregory, fine. All the better for seeing you after this long time. So, sit down. This is a very special occasion. Perhaps you will join me in a little glass of port, my friend.
Hey, wonderful idea. Heinrich, we're in something of a jam. I'm hoping you can help us.
Oh, we shall see what you can do. Say, Gregory.
Oh, thank
you. Mr. Taylor?
Thank you.
Now, Gregory, tell me how I may help you.
Heinrich, I want you to look at these silver pesos.
Ah.
Is there anything odd or rare about them?
Or any way we could trace their ownership?
None. They're common enough coins, and yet I have many such duplicate coins here. I will check this for weight. I will put one of your coins on the scale, though. And on the other scale, I will put one of my duplicate coins, ones that are not to be genuine, though. And what did we find?
The coin I gave you is much lighter.
It must be counterfeit.
I do not think so. Let me look at it through my glass. Oh, very ingenious.
What is it, Henry?
This coin unscrews. The hollow section inside, though.
There's a white powder inside.
Dope. At last we know what we're up against. May I use your telephone, Heinrich?
But of course, my friend.
So we're mixed up with a dope ring, Gregory.
No doubt about it, Sandy. Now perhaps I can make Magruder nibble a little humble pie.
speaking.
Magruder, this is Gregory Hood.
It is, huh? Where are you?
Goldwasser's coin shop on Market. I've got some news for you, Magruder.
And I've got some for you. We found your car deserted on Turk Street.
With a corpse in it?
Sure.
Good. Then now perhaps you believe the story.
Only it wasn't the corpse you described. It was a nice fresh corpse by the name of Penelope.
Penny? Dead?
Stay where you are, Hood. I'll be right over to arrest you on suspicion of murder.
You'll hear the rest of tonight's story from the casebook of Gregory Hood in just a second. Time for me to mention that the only thing necessary to make a good dinner just perfect is to serve that good dinner with a good Petri dinner wine. With steak or chops or stew, and in fact with any meat or meat dish, you couldn't ask for a better companion than a glass of Petri California Burgundy. Petri Burgundy is a hearty, full-bodied red wine. It's the very last word in wonderful flavor. If you're having fish or chicken for dinner, then you'd love Petri California Sauterne. Petri Sauterne is a delicately flavored, subtle white wine that your whole family will enjoy. Get a bottle of both, Petri Burgundy and Petri Sauterne. It's bound to be good if it's Petri.
It's Petri, straight from the dish.
I'm enjoying it immensely.
Oh, no, Dave's on the sauce.
That's for
that liquid dinner.
Yes.
I'll have some Petri. I'll have some Petri wine with my Petri wine, please.
Here you go. And a Petri wine chaser. I still want to call it Petri. Because it's spelled like Rob Petri.
No.
Oh, it was Petri.
It was better than Petri.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Better than Petri, yeah.
Oh, yes.
So Gregory Hood starts off with a bang with this series on episode number one with a...
Yeah. I'm picking up a hitchhiker, and she drives off with a corpse, and wow.
And becomes one.
And becomes
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Then they have the mysterious white powder that is, that's a wide variety of white powders that could be in the 21st century.
Yes, that's true. It could be many things. I wonder if they're going to allude to them or not.
Yeah.
I know in some of the pre-code movies, they mention particular drug names, but not often in older films and such.
No, in some of the pre-code movies, they were quite daring. Very daring.
Yep. I love pre-code movies.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. And not all of them pure.
Absolutely.
Let's just say that.
There is a white powder that has been found in my vehicle, but that's only because I passed by a Dunkin' Donuts, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, I forget what comedian said, if you ever get pulled over by a cop, always keep a jelly donut. Then you just put it on your forehead and slam it against the steering wheel and look up at him, like you're bleeding.
Is there a problem, officer? Care for a crawler?
Yeah.
I did one weirdest sketch where a cop pulled me over for speeding, and as I was looking for my driver's license and insurance, I handed him this box of donuts. It said, "Oh, here, can you hold this for me? That's what I'm looking for." And he opens it up, turns away from the car, opens it up and starts eating the donuts. And I drive off, and he looks up behind him and says, "Now, what did I stop here for?" Oh, well.
There was a scene in a Cheech and Chong movie similar to that. Yeah. But I digress.
Yeah. Oh, is there?
Yeah. But it wasn't donuts. One donut.
Oh my!
One donut. Okay.
The only thing I'd have to bribe an officer with is my emergency emergency kale chips.
Ah.
When my daughter-in-law was pregnant with my grandson, the cop pulled her over once for speeding. And she threw up on him.
God. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's an extra ticket. No, he actually let her go. She said, I'm sorry, I'm pregnant. Says, just go.
Just go away.
You got to find a way to clean it up before you go back to the station house. And what happened to you? Oh, a pregnant lady threw up on me. You know, no, you can't do that.
Sure.
Therefore, he didn't want to write that one up. So he just pushed her along the way.
Yeah, that was before the body cams.
Sorry, Sarge. I don't know how my body cam got turned off and partially erased. Don't know how that happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
But don't worry. The neighbor had their ring cam on, so we got
everything.
There you
go. Yeah, or porch cam or whatever they call them. Yep.
Porch cam, ring cam. You have your jack-o'-lantern cam. Some people are putting things in their jack-o'-lantern when they have it out for trick-or-treat. Your jack-o'-lantern cam.
Be great to hook it up with soundbite. Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, that would be incredible. Here, put your hand in here. Put your hand in here. Don't say Beetlejuice. Say Beetlejuice three times. Beetlejuice.
There you go. Beetlejuice three times. Does it every time. Well, let's head back to the conclusion of the casebook of Gregory Hood from Hoodsville.
Well, Sandy, you certainly were in up to your ears that time. I guess you were able to talk yourself out of it.
With Magruder? No, Harry. The more eloquent Gregory became, the more suspicious it seemed to make Magruder. And I couldn't do anything to prevent Magruder booking him on suspicion of murder.
You mean to say you were actually locked up?
Yes, Harry. I landed in the jug with a resounding splash at just about the time a civilized man is warming his cockles with a good brandy. Sandy scurried off to get a writ of habeas corpus, but for nearly an hour I found myself in a cell adjoining a certain unhappy character named Joe. Poor Joe. I don't think he knew what to make of me.
Joe the Sipper.
Hi, Joe.
What's your handle, Mac?
Sam. Sam McGee.
You look slick. You want a Charlie's mob?
No, work I'm on.
What'd they think you for, Sam?
The works. Sliced up my mall.
You kidding?
Kidding? You're talking to Sammy the Slicer. Ought to see what I did to Fanny. Cut her in 19 pieces. A surgeon couldn't have done a better job. Not as neat a slicing as I did on Aunt Agatha, though. I can still see her expression as I cut her head off.
Look, I'm just a small-time craft man. They shouldn't ought to put me next to you. Hey, Charlie, hey, let me out of here.
Hey, off it, Joe. I'm going to spring you. I'm going to spring both of us.
I don't want to go nowhere with you. Hey, Charlie!
Pipe down, Joe. I've got a pineapple in my pocket. I'm going to toss it out there in the aisle and blow this coop sky high.
Don't do it. Hey, Charlie, come here. Sam the Slicer's going to make a break. Get me away from him, will you? I stand in my constitutional rights. A guy's got a right to be locked up nice and quiet.
Pipe down, Joe.
Your attorney's here, Mr. Hood.
Oh. I'm sorry it took so long, Gregory. Come on.
It's a cozy little cell, but I don't want to overstay my welcome.
So long, Joe.
You search him. The guy's a killer, and he's got a pineapple on him.
Don't bother you, Mr. Hood.
No. But he's got the gall down, just imagination. Did you get the car back, Sandy?
No. Still being held as evidence.
Then we must grab a cab as fast as we can. There's a lot of unfinished business ahead of us. Fisherman's Wharf.
Okay. Why Fisherman's Wharf, Gregory?
I just put in a call to Herb Kane of the San Francisco Chronicle. He tells me there's a film company shooting night location there.
How does a film company tie in with our little headache?
It's simple. I'm looking for an actor. Now, what's playing at the Geary Theater? A drawing room comedy.
Yes, and there's a costume musical at the Curran.
Correct. The stage show at the Golden Gate is a dance band and singers, no actors, so that's out. Therefore, a film company. Get it?
Absolutely and unequivocally, no.
Very well, let's work the case out backwards.
Oh, that'll be a great help. Why not sideways?
maybe my recent incarceration has made me a little stir-crazy. Tell me how you've figured the thing out so far, Sandy.
Well, obviously, Travers, the man we found on the bridge, was mixed up with a dope gang and was probably killed in some internal quarrel.
And exhibit number two, the late Penelope, where did she fit in?
Oh, I don't think that's a hard one. She was a member of the ring. They stationed her near the entrance to the bridge, knowing that a man of your notorious susceptibilities would be bound to pick her up.
Oh, indeed.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. And then she stole the corpse. The hotel clerk was bribed to deny the murdered man's existence. And later they killed the girl to make things safer. Or maybe she wanted too much of a cut.
Sandy, you're excelling yourself.
Elementary, my dear Gregory. But I still don't see where an actor enters the picture.
But surely you see who the killer is now, don't you?
Well, I've read enough mystery stories to know that it must be the LSP, the least suspected person. You have that LSP tone in your voice, Gregory. But we haven't met any LSPs, unless it's Goldwasser or Dr. Arnold.
Uh-oh. Remember, Sandy, the original bridge episode was never reported, nor was Travers' car turned in. Magruder told us that.
So the traffic cop to whom we turned over Travers' car was a phony?
And our killer, probably. He was tailing Travers to make sure he died.
Which he did. But we got away with the corpse.
So he phoned poor Penelope across the bay to stop us on the approach to the bridge on the way back. Now, who could, at a moment's notice, outfit himself as a traffic cop for shadowing purposes?
I get it, Gregory. An actor.
Right. An actor having a uniform for such a role.
Here you are, Mac. Fisherman's Wharf.
Fine. Wait here for us, driver. We won't be a minute.
Okay.
Come on, Sandy.
Well, look at the crowds, Gregory.
Well, it's not surprising. Hollywood's putting on a free outdoor floor show.
You can't come any farther. Sorry.
Oh, who's the director on this picture?
Oh, Chester Garland. I'm Bud Denton, second assistant. Can I help you?
I hope so. Do you have an actor in this production who's playing a traffic cop?
Yeah, funny you should ask that. He's been missing all day. So's his motorcycle. And no answer from his hotel either.
Do you happen to remember the name of his hotel?
Yeah. Hotel Barton on Turk Street.
And his name?
Gunn. Fred Gunn.
Fred Gunn. Much obliged to you. Come on, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Now it's clear, Sandy. The dying man's words meant not a weapon, but a name.
What?
Fred Gunn. Let's skip back into our cab and go back to the Hotel Barton and visit with him.
I tell you, there's no Fred Gunn been living here.
And I tell you that he's still living in 207. Give us a pass key.
Are you cops?
No, but we're sending for them in a few minutes. You might as well keep yourself out of a bad mess.
Here's the pass key. And don't tie me up in anything. I just did what I was told.
And what were you told, my friend?
To say that I was living in 207. I didn't see any harm in that. We don't ask too many questions here.
Is Fred Gunn in his room now?
Yeah, came in an hour ago with some drunken bum that couldn't stand up. They were plastered as hootie owls.
Let's go, Sandy.
Right. Might as well walk up. It's only the second floor.
I suppose if I were in this game professionally, I'd be carrying a gun, Sandy.
I'd feel safer if you were, Gregory. Looks as if we've got a killer cornered in a rat hole. He might shoot before he asks questions, you know.
Sandy.
Yeah?
I don't want to be melodramatic, but you've got a wife and two children. I wish you'd go back and wait for me in the lobby.
Nice of you, Gregory. But this is Hood Company business. In any case, I don't want to miss the fun.
You're a remarkably square man, Sandy. There are times when I'm quite fond of you.
Yeah. Here we are. 207. Going to knock?
Uh-uh. Our only chance is to rush him. Hope the door isn't locked. Watch out, Sandy.
Yep.
Gunn.
He's asleep on the bed. Take it easy, Gregory. We can tie him with the bedclothes.
He doesn't need bedclothes, Sandy. He needs a shroud. He's dead. Smell this bottle of whiskey. It's been spiked with cyanide.
Great Scott. Gregory, look. There on the floor.
The now familiar corpse of Mr. Travers. How it does get around.
Oh, we're in a serious jam now, Gregory. Knee-deep in corpses and not a single suspect left.
We don't need one. I know who murdered Gunn, and oddly enough, he's in the room now.
The killer? Where? In the closet?
Closer than that, Sandy.
Oh, now look, Gregory. If you're going to put the finger on me as the least suspected person is going too far. I won't stand for it.
No, Sandy. Mr. Travers lying on the floor is the latest killer.
But you mean the corpse is the murderer?
Sure. Remember the empty cyanide vial? Before Travers was killed himself, he'd poisoned Gunn's whiskey. Gunn figured he'd stay sober until he'd retrieved Travers' corpse.
He brought it back here, started to figure out how he was going to dispose of it.
Exactly. He decided to take a slug of whiskey to help his thinking machinery, and so he died. Murdered by his own victim.
Oh, I see.
And now I have a call to make. Elmwood 6, 4222.
Calling Lieutenant Magruder?
Sure. This is going to be fun. Magruder in homicide, please.
After you're through, Gregory, I'll call Mary. We'll have one of her delicious rarebits, and you'll stay the night.
It's a date. Magruder, this is Gregory Hood. Now, settle back in your chair and make yourself comfortable, because I've got a fairy story to tell you. Once upon a time, a couple of worthy citizens were driving across the Bay Bridge when the car in front of them started to weave. You'll never believe this, Magruder, but as...
Gregory, that was a swell story. Very different, too.
Yes, and I might say it almost marked the end of my beautiful friendship with Magruder.
That was quite a twist, Gregory, the murderer being murdered by his victim.
And I'd like to point out a moral, if you'll pardon my pointing.
Oh, go right ahead.
The story proved that you get what you give.
And fortunately, that works for the best, too.
Ah, quite a philosopher, aren't you? Just what do you mean?
Well, we all get what we give. Look, when you drop by my house... What do I give you?
A warm welcome.
And?
A good dinner.
And?
A glass of Petri wine.
Right. And when I visit you, I get...
Petri wine.
Right again. And that's because we both know that Petri wine is a good wine. Petri wine has got to be good wine. Look at the long years of skill and experience that goes into its making. Why, the Petri family has been making wine for generations. Winemaking is their heritage, a heritage handed on down from father to son, from father to son. And don't forget, ever since the Petri family first went into business, they've watched over that business personally. Yes, the making of Petri wine is a family affair, and the Petri family has every intention of keeping it just that. So you know that the name Petri on a bottle of wine is more than a trademark. It's the personal assurance of the Petri family that Petri wine is and always will be good wine. Well, Gregory, to what page of your casebook are you turning next Monday?
Next Monday, Harry, I'm going to tell you an odd story that concerns a San Francisco cable car, a rather unusual brunette, and a blood-stained hatchet. I call it the Black Museum. See you next Monday, Harry.
The Casebook of Gregory Hood is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. Original music is composed and played by Dean Fosler. Mr. Gail Gordon plays the part of Gregory Hood, and Sanderson Taylor is played by Mr. Bill Johnstone. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. The Casebook of Gregory Hood comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family.
Hollywood.
Goodnight.
For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Michael Shane, followed immediately by The Casebook of Gregory Hood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Mutually speaking, it is. There we go with the $3 pencils.
You know what's funny is Nigel Bruce was contractually obligated to play Watson for the next year, even though Basil Rathbone was gone. And they did a pilot for him for Mutual before. Now, it shows you how much he was paying attention. at the end of the pilot episode, which never got aired, I don't think, the announcer came on and said, this is the Mutual Broadcasting Network. And he turned and said, what the hell was that? I mean, he'd been on Mutual for all those years, and he had not listened once to that one bit about the Mutual Broadcast Network.
That's funny. What is that? Oh, just something we've been doing for the last several years.
Yeah.
Oh, and hello in the chat room to Duck Northwest Media.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Coming
to
regular here at Erie House. Yeah.
We are deeply appreciative. Hope you're enjoying these radio programs and our little goofiness in between and some facts and fun. That's what we do. We got more.
Hitchhiker's Tales. Yeah, we do. We have two more tales to go tonight. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, since we're I'll
tell you one thing about that last show. I didn't realize until listening to it was the Mutual Broadcast. What the heck is that? No. That Bill Johnstone, your second favorite show Shadow was the assistant. I didn't hear it in his voice, and I usually hear his voice. I usually pick up on him. And what's funny, both he and Brett Morrison, although not on the same one, two former Shadows, both did several episodes of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater as well.
I would have never guessed that was Gail Gordon. As great.
Yeah, I heard him and some other things. Going back to 1938, and the there's a Christmas story that the Cinnamon Bear, and he was one of the characters in that as well. And that was a serious role there.
Yeah,
serious. I mean, I'm quite shocked. I mean, that's akin to when the one time I've ever known Jimmy Stewart to be a bad guy in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Which one was that?
Yeah. That was The Thin Man, and that was the only movie I can remember that he ever played a villain.
Yeah, yep. That was pretty early in his career, too. You know, so hey, you got to take what you can get, right?
I liken that to Henry Fonda in Once Upon a Time in the West.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
And that was
he was a vicious, vicious guy. Insidious. Absolute monster.
Yeah.
I mean, just cold.
God, you know your westerns too, CW. You continue to impress. week after week. We're always grateful for your insights. That's how you became part of this mutant family here.
I am the artificial intelligence of Internet Movie Database. When they can't find something on Internet Movie Database, they contact me.
See, for me, artificial intelligence means if I don't know the answer, I make it up. there you go.
That's what I usually do anyway. Yep.
Dave, but at least you're credible. you got that going for you.
Some days are better than others, that's all I can say.
Right, and we're already in kind of like detective mode, sort of, with Gregory Hood. Let's get on over to Boston Blackie next.
Yeah, I wonder if that was kind of the secret of these detective-type stories where they were always adversarial with the police, almost always. Richard Diamond wasn't. But the rest of them seemed to be adversarial, where you'll find that here with Inspector Weston. I forget his name, but the guy who plays the police inspector, he was Maurice Taupin, who was the Mysterious Traveler. This was a role he did on Boston Black. Mm-hmm. And it's another role you won't recognize his voice being. So.
No kidding. I view detectives of the era. I think that natural animosity, it's kind of like the mafia. They kept the cops in line.
Most definitely. I think they got that actually from Sherlock Holmes. Remember, he was always at odds with Inspector Lestrade of the of the Yard.
That's right. I think was jealous of Sherlock Holmes though, because he clearly understood who had the superior mind. He had to
most
have known.
Definitely. Elementary, my dear Lestrade, elementary. And just for you comic book aficionados, just remember, the original Dark Knight, Batman, was in the beginning very much at odds with the police.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Instead of working with them, he didn't have a hotline to Commissioner Gordon. No, no, no.
No, he did not.
No, he did not.
Yeah.
But all things come back to the original detective, Sherlock Holmes. Yes, I think they all borrowed a little bit from Dear Sherlock, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's brainchild.
An endearing character, for sure. Let's get on with Boston Blackie. It's called The Ghost of Florence Newton.
Looks like episode number 47 coming to us from May. I can't be right. No. It's not 47. 124. It comes to us from May 28th of 1947.
Hope we get a goat this time.
We had a goat last time.
There he is.
Uh-oh, a hitchhiker. And is she pretty? Come on in, young lady. I'm bound for Little Ben, but I'll drop you anywhere you like.
Thank you. You're very kind.
My name is Blackie, Boston Blackie.
I'm Florence Newton.
Want to give me an idea of where you'd like to be dropped off?
I want to go to the farm.
Anyone in particular?
My own farm. The one my father owns.
Uh-huh.
I've been wading in the creek, and I hope he won't mind.
Well, there isn't much to do out here in the country except go wading, is there?
No, there isn't.
What do you kids do for excitement? Saturday night dances, movies, that sort of thing?
Yes. That sort of thing.
You're not particularly talkative, are you?
I guess I'm not.
Good guessing.
This is the farm right here. Would you please stop?
Why, sure.
Thank you very much.
No trouble at all. You may have a little trouble with a door on your side. It sticks. Oh, wait right where you are, and I'll go around and open it for you.
Thank you.
Be there in a jiffy. Well, here we are, young lady. Where did she go? Florence. Florence Newton. That's funny. Maybe she went into the house. Guess I'd better find out. I imagine you must be Mr. Newton, is that right?
Yes.
I just drove your daughter to the door, and when I went to help her out of the car, she disappeared. I thought maybe she came in the house here.
My daughter? What did she look like?
Young, about 21, I'd say. Attractive, brown hair, blue eyes, about so high. She'd been wading in the creek, and I gave her a lift. Well, what's the matter? Isn't she here?
No, she isn't. You described my daughter all right, but she was drowned in that creek you were talking about 3 years ago.
And now back to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
Well, Thompson, I guess you close your case against Butch Heathers tomorrow morning, don't you?
You're going to close it, Inspector Faraday, and get a conviction of murder, too. I've never been as sure of a case since I've been district attorney.
No reason for you to doubt you'll get a conviction in this case. Boston Blackie's going to send Heathers to the chair for you.
I've never known you to be so sure of Blackie before, Inspector. I thought you two didn't even get along.
Oh, we rib each other a lot, but we don't mean it. At least I don't. I know I can depend on Blackie when I really need him.
Well, I need him this time, Inspector. Blackie says he saw Heathers kill that man. If he repeats that statement in court, that's all I want.
Sure it is. It's all you need. Blackie's word is reliable. When he says he sees something, he really sees it.
Howdy, Blackie. Welcome to Little Bend. This is Harry Oldfield.
Pleasure, Blackie.
How are you, Oldfield? Well, Sheriff, do you have those records on Butch Heathers ready for me?
Sure do. So Butch went to the big city and got himself into real trouble, did he?
He sure did. I want his local record to turn over to the DA.
I knew that boy was no good when I arrested him for stealing Clyde Ranson's shotgun 5 years ago. Well, here's all the dope on him as a local bad boy, Blackie. I made copies so you can have these.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Those records going to send Heathers to the chair, Blackie?
These records plus what I saw, Oldfield. And speaking of seeing things, Sheriff, I saw Florence Newton this morning.
Flo Newton? Well, she's been dead 3 years.
So her father told me.
Blackie, now don't you try to pull that old one on me. I've been hearing for years about people picking up ghosts in every town in this country.
But I did pick up this girl, Sheriff. She said she was Florence Newton, and her father admitted the girl was his daughter when I described it to him.
Blackie, I'm afraid the country air's gone to your head. Better stay in the city where you don't see things.
Look, now look, I don't believe in ghosts any more than you do. But that girl got in my car down by the creek, rode up to the Newton farm with me, and then just disappeared.
Well, Blackie, she acted like a ghost anyhow.
Believe me, Blackie, Flo Newton's been dead for over 3 years.
All right, Sheriff, I believe you, but believe me, I picked up a girl in my car this morning, and she was Florence Newton.
Well, it's possible, Blackie, but where did you get wings for your car?
Okay, Larry, whatever. When I see things, I see things, and I see I'm not getting anywhere with you. Thanks for the records on Butch Heathers, and so long.
Goodbye, Blackie, and say hello to Miss Newton on the way home.
Goodbye.
Well, now, how do you like that, Mr. Oldfield? Boston Blackie suddenly seen ghosts.
Well, that's some story, Sheriff. You think I could make anybody believe it?
Well, you're a writing man, Mr. Oldfield. Your paper sent you up here to get a story on Butch Heathers, but I think you got a better one on Blackie and the ghost of Florence Newton.
Oh, good morning, Mary. Come on in.
I certainly will. Blackie, have you seen the morning paper?
No, I haven't. I was out of the city yesterday, and I didn't get back to town till early this morning.
I'll say you were out of the city, and out of your mind, too. Look at this newspaper. The whole town's laughing at you.
What for? What if I... Uh-oh.
Blackie, since when do you not only see a ghost, but tell the newspapers about it?
I didn't tell the papers about it, Mary. Hey, wait a minute. That fellow Oldfield in the sheriff's office must have been a reporter.
Oh, fine. Well, you phone that paper right away and get a retraction. Wait till Inspector Faraday reads this. He'll haunt you with it for years.
I can't help that, Mary. I did see that girl. I talked to her. I had her in my car. I took her home.
You fell asleep. You had a dream and talked out of turn to a reporter.
Now, Mary, stop that. If the girl was a ghost, she was a ghost. But she was in my car, and now let's skip it. I have Butch Heathers to worry about today. I'm going to help make a ghost out of him.
Oh. So you can keep seeing him for the rest of your life, too?
Look, let's forget about the ghost of Florence Newton and worry about the trial of Butch Heathers.
I thought no one was worried about it except Heathers. Well, you saw him kill that man, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. And I have some reports on him from Little Bend that should help cinch the case against him. You going to be in court?
I wouldn't miss being there. You're the star witness for the state.
Yes, and when I get in the witness chair, it's going to be another kind of a chair for Butch Heathers.
Order! Order in the court.
Will Boston Blackie take the stand? Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Take the witness chair.
Thank you.
Proceed, Mr. District Attorney.
Thank you, Your Honor. What's your name?
Boston Blackie.
Do you know Butch Heathers?
Yes, I do.
Could you point him out in this courtroom?
Of course, there he is, in that end seat at the first table there, the man wearing the green shirt.
Will you tell this courtroom where you saw Butch Heathers and what he was doing on the night of June 6th last?
Well, well, I was walking through the alley behind the garage where I keep my car, and I saw Heathers approach a man known as Ellie Spry, pull out a gun, and pump three bullets into him.
Yes?
Then he ran. I chased him, but he got away.
You say you definitely saw Butch Heathers kill Ellie Spry.
That's right. It was definitely Butch Heathers.
Thank you, Blackie. Your witness, Mr. Walters.
Thank you, Mr. District Attorney. Blackie, you say you saw Butch Heathers kill Ellie Spry.
Yes, I did.
You saw the murder committed with your own eyes?
With my own eyes.
Those same eyes that yesterday morning saw the ghost of a girl who'd been dead and buried for over 3 years.
Well...
Order! Order in the court! You did see a ghost on the road to Little Bend yesterday morning, didn't you?
I saw a girl.
Hmm. You claim you saw Florence Newton, Blackie. The description was perfect. But Florence Newton is dead, isn't she?
Yes, so I understand.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you have just heard this man frankly and openly admit that he saw a ghost. Now, we all know there are no such things as ghosts, except in fairy stories and in the minds of people with overdeveloped imaginations. Order! Order in the court!
There will be no outburst.
Blackie, Inspector Faraday of the Homicide Department is one of your best friends. Isn't he?
Yes, he is.
And you'd like to see him send Butch Heathers to the chair, wouldn't you?
I'd like to see the guilty punished.
And you'd like to see your friends come up in the world, too, don't you? And the conviction of Butch Heathers might get a promotion for Faraday, mightn't it?
He's a good police officer. He's deserved a promotion for a long time.
And you'd like to help him get it, wouldn't you?
I've always helped Faraday whenever I could.
Thank you, Blackie. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, by this witness' own testimony, the facts are clear. There's no proof here that Butch Heathers killed Ellie Spry. This man sees ghosts, so he can see things that don't exist. This man who claims he saw my client commits the murder, claims so in an effort to aid and improve the status of the police department friend of his. How can you convict a man on the testimony of a witness such as this? How can you send a man to...
Will the defendant please rise? Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant, Butch Heathers, not guilty.
Court is adjourned.
Hey, Blackie. Blackie.
Oh, hello, Faraday. Well, looks as if he got away from us.
Yeah, he got away, all right. A great guy you are. I counted on you to help me send this guy where he belongs. But you have to go out and see a ghost.
You don't believe me either, do you?
I'll say I don't. Do you realize what that ghost has done?
Sure, he got into this trial and got Butch Heathers out of a jam. And we can't touch him now. He can't be tried again for the same crime. I know all about that. And I know something about that ghost, too.
Will you stop talking about that ghost?
I'm going to find that ghost and let it do the talking, Faraday. I'm going to find it if I have to follow it to the Happy Horning Grounds.
And now back to Boston Blackie. On his way to the country village of Little Bend, to get the criminal records of Butch Heathers on trial for murder, Boston Blackie gives a lift to a girl who says she is Florence Newton. Later, it turns out Florence Newton has been dead for over 3 years. Blackie is star witness in the trial against Butch Heathers because he saw Butch commit the crime. But the defense attorney wins an acquittal for Butch on the grounds that a man who sees a ghost can see a lot of things that don't exist.
Back to Boston Blackie soon.
Good thing I don't see ghosts usually. Usually.
Even on ghost walks? Man.
Only once. And I didn't see it. Yeah. I didn't see it. I've stayed in haunted hotels a haunted room once and nothing.
So far.
But just once experience in the old Mansfield Reformatory. Other than that, no.
I had experiences in the reformatory I don't want to discuss.
Yeah, I don't think you should. I think you've got a order sanctioning you for talking about it, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, one of
that's
those...
That's your probation officer told me anyway.
Yep. Ooh. Darn that guy with his loose lips. Why I oughta. Yes, indeedy.
So Boston Blackie seeing ghost didn't mention having a little nip of that Petri wine, did he?
I wonder.
Well, you know, I think now there's more belief in that kind of thing than there was back then. But he didn't actually say he saw a ghost. He even pointed that out, too. He said he saw somebody who said they were that person who had been dead for 3 years.
I'm trying to believe in Petri wine. No.
You're still back on Petri wine? Well, I thought you'd polish up that bottle by now.
Yeah, trying to find out if I believe in it or not. It doesn't really exist.
I don't know. Isn't there a famous ghost somewhere in the Midwest? I think it's Illinois, where a female visage dressed in white will try and hitch a ride, and then suddenly when they're in the vehicle, they just disappear.
I wouldn't be surprised if more than one community had that particular. Because I think I've heard of that a few times.
Yeah.
Unless I'm hearing the same one over and over.
There are several stories from many different areas very similar to that. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Well, hitchhiker ghosts are
common. But that doesn't mean that they aren't true, but it does mean it's hard to prove.
And a very, very sad memory of a hitchhiker. We covered a lot of movies and TV shows, but we forgot when Large Marge picked up Pee Wee Herman.
Oh.
We mustn't forget Large Marge. When she made her face blow up, that was awesome. You can see the handiwork of Tim Burton there in that particular scene. He was always big on the animation, claymation type animation.
Oh,
pretty cool.
Yep.
But we should probably finish off with Gregory Hood because we got to. Not Gregory Hood. I mean Boston Blackie because we got to squeeze in Quiet Please. Let's wrap up the ghost of Florence Newton.
As we return to our story, it is the day following the trial, and Mary Wesley is with Blackie in his apartment.
Blackie, I'm sorry I teased you about Florence Newton. Can't you do something to find her again?
Yeah, I've tried that, Mary. I drove out to Little Bend again last night and asked everywhere for a girl who might look just like the dead Florence Newton. But no luck.
Well, that's because there was no ghost. Now, will you stop trying to convince yourself there was?
Mary, did it ever occur to you that I never said the girl was a ghost? The girl was real, flesh and blood, real. It was the father and the sheriff and everyone else who said if I saw Florence Newton, I saw a ghost.
Well, you described the girl to Mr. Newton, and he said it was his daughter.
He said it answered the description of his daughter, but that it must have been the ghost of his daughter, if it was anything. If I could just find her again.
I'll help you, but I certainly never thought I'd help you look for another girl.
I'll get Faraday in with us. Maybe we could...
Oh, speak of the inspector, he rings the doorbell.
Chances are that he'd rather wring my neck. Come in.
Boston Blackie.
Florence Newton.
What?
Florence, am I glad to see you.
Thanks, Blackie, but...
Blackie, if this girl's a ghost,
I'm not a ghost, Miss...
Oh, excuse me, Miss Newton, Miss Wesley.
Hello. So you are real, aren't you? Real pretty, too.
Miss Wesley, I came here to explain all about what happened.
It's about time somebody explained something.
To begin with, my name isn't Florence Newton. I'm Vivian Peters, and I was paid $1,000 to play that trick on you.
Who paid you? Butch Heathers?
Yes. He was out on bail, but I didn't know that. Or him. He said it was just a gag.
Mm-hmm.
When I read in the papers this morning that he was acquitted because you said you saw a ghost, well, I realized why I'd been asked to pose as Florence Newton.
That's the best thing you've realized all day, Miss Peters. But you're going to be one of his worst enemies for telling me this, you know.
Why? What have I done?
You've proved my testimony against Butch was correct.
Well, so what, Blackie? Heathers was tried and acquitted for killing Ellie Spry, and he can't be tried again for the same crime.
No, he can't, Mary, but maybe there's some other way to get at him. I'm going down to see Faraday. Miss Peters, did anyone see you come to my apartment?
No, Blackie.
Good. You and Mary stay here till I get back. Everything's going to be all right, unless I'm all wrong.
Come in.
Hello, Horace.
Oh, Butch, come in.
Thanks.
Well, how's it feel to be a free man?
Great, Wallace, great. You did a good job for me. You're the best lawyer in town.
You didn't kill Ellie Spry. That's why I got you off, Butch.
Yeah. But Blackie had me nailed for that killing till you pried me loose with that business about the ghost. I knew that ghost story would make Blackie sound silly.
What do you mean you knew it, Butch? I didn't know it myself until I saw the papers just before the trial.
I got news for you, Wallace. I give you a little assist in beating a rap the state had on me. I fixed up that ghost.
What are you talking about?
Cost me 1,000 clams, Wallace. Don't worry. We'll come out of your fee.
Wait a minute, Butch. Did Blackie think he was Florence Newton, or didn't he?
Sure he did. It was the girl I hired to say she was Flo Newton and go through the whole routine. Just as Blackie said.
Butch, I hope you're lying.
Nah, not lying. I'm bragging. That was a pretty smart trick, wasn't it? You see, I knew about Flo dying in that creek a while back because... I was living in Little Bend when it happened.
Get out of here, Butch.
Huh?
You heard me? Get out! I took your case and defended you because I thought you were innocent. Now I know you're not. You did kill Ellie Spry, didn't you?
Is that what the jury said?
No. Because you did something behind my back to ruin Boston Blackie's testimony.
Sure made a mess of it, didn't I?
Laugh if you want to, Butch. Laugh because you know you can't be tried again for killing Ellie Spry. Laugh because you made a fool out of me. But you're a killer, Butch.
Yeah, smart one, though, huh?
Yes, you're smart, all right, but so am I. Legally, you're free, but I'm a lawyer, and I'm going to find some loophole in the law to bring you to justice. Maybe that girl can help me. Maybe she can go to the police and tell them.
Think so, Walters? She's a ghost, remember? And all a ghost can say is, boo!
Go ahead, Butch. Have a good laugh. Go out and have a good time, too, because she won't be having a good laugh or a good time for very long.
Hey. Who are you calling, Wallace?
The police. I won't be a party to a conspiracy.
I think you better not, Wallace.
You don't frighten me with that gun, Butch.
But you bother me with that phone. Put it down. Or I'll knock it down, you...
I think I'd better take that gun. You think so? No, so...
Now I gotta go get another lawyer.
Blackie, get out of my office before you start seeing things in here.
Look, Faraday, will you start seeing things? Will you start seeing how and why I was made to believe I picked up Florence Newton on the road to Little Bend?
I know why you think you picked up Florence Newton on the road to Little Bend. You're a big dope.
You mean I'm a big dupe?
Dope, dope. What's the difference?
No. Faraday, that girl's real name is Vivian Peters, and she was hired by Butch Heathers to pose as Florence Newton.
How do you know?
Because she's in my apartment. She told me all about it. Butch hired her when he was out on bail.
Now you're not only seeing crazy things, you're saying crazy things. How would Butch know about the death of Florence Newton so he could rig up such a stunt?
Butch lived in Little Bend. He knew what she looked like, and the records show that he was there when the Newton girl drowned in that creek.
So he was there. So he knew the girl was drowned. So what am I supposed to do now? I can't send Butch Heathers where I want to send him. He can't be tried again for killing Ellie Spry.
I know he can't, but I've got to... Listen. There's your phone, Faraday.
I know it, Blackie. I got to know something. Faraday speaking.
Inspector Faraday, this is Madeline Wells, Harold Walters' secretary.
Yes, Miss Wells.
Inspector, Mr. Walters has been killed.
What?
He's in his office, dead. He's been shot.
Wait a minute. Blackie, Butch Heathers' lawyer has been killed.
I know. I heard her say it.
Stay where you are, Miss Wells.
Yes.
Don't touch anything. We'll be right up.
All right, Inspector.
Well, Blackie, what do you think of that?
It's not what I think, Faraday. It's what I know. Butch Heathers has made another mistake. Only this time, we're going to make it his last.
Oh, no, Blackie. You bungled things the last time I had Butch. Go have yourself some fun in a graveyard. Meet some new ghosts, maybe. You're out of this murder.
I'm out?
Oh, no. You're out? Oh, yes. From here on, I'm handling Butch Heathers all by myself.
You mean mishandling Butch, don't you?
I'm going to surprise you, Blackie. I've got an idea. In fact, I've got two ideas.
You'd better get an idea how you can pin the murder of Harold Walters on Butch before you do anything else. We're just guessing he's our man.
He's not our man. He's my man. And I know how I could pin this on him, providing I get no interference from you. I'm going to have you kept here in this office for an hour, so I can have my way, and you can't get in it.
It's a funny thing how many uses you can get out of a fire escape like this.
Mm.
You can get out of a building on it, hang laundry on it, sunbathe and sleep on it.
Yeah, keep quiet on it, too, Muldoon.
All right.
The glass in this window to Butch's room isn't soundproof.
Yeah, but it's sure almost look-proof, Inspector. Why, it's so dirty I can hardly see through it.
I can see enough. I can see Butch in there and the door to the hall.
Are you sure that, Peter's girl will do what you told her to do.
She'd better. You know, I'm sort of proud of myself about this.
Yeah.
This is the kind of idea Blackie would get. He's not the only one who's smart.
Well, what if it doesn't work?
What do you expect from Blackie's ideas? Uh-oh, there must have been a knock on the door in there. Butch just got up and walked over to it.
Well, now he can lift up the window a little, huh?
Yeah. Quick, while he's on the other side of the room.
All right.
That's enough. Butch just opened the door.
Is it the Peters dame?
It sure is.
Well, Miss Peters, you took long enough getting here. Come in.
Thanks.
We can hear pretty good.
You phoned and said you wanted to talk to me, sweetheart. Well, what about?
You ought to know what about. I didn't know I was going to save you from the chair when I said I'd play ghost for Boston Blackie.
Hey,
what you didn't know didn't hurt you too much, did it? You got to breath the country air out of it, too, didn't you?
You got out of a murder rat, Mr. Heathers. And everyone knows you killed Ellie Spry. Blackie's testimony was right, every word of it.
Yeah?
You made an accomplice out of me, Heathers, and I don't like it.
Inspector,
oh, you don't?
You...
Well, well. It's too bad.
It's so bad that I'm going to the police.
Oh, I wouldn't do that if I was you.
But you are not me.
Look, I killed Ellie Spry. I got away with it. I killed Harold Walters, my lawyer. I'm going to get away with that, too. I'd include you in that list in a minute. And don't forget it.
Gee, the police will know you killed Walter.
Yeah, they won't even suspect me. Then Walters just win a case for me. Anybody in this town ought to know that Walters and I are the best of friends. Now don't go to the cops, sweetheart. Won't do you any good, and I wouldn't like it. You understand?
Come on, Muldoon, let's go.
Yes, I understand.
I've heard all I need to hear.
I understand.
All right, I'll raise the window now.
Hey. Who's out there?
No time now. Let's go right through the glass.
All right.
Don't move, Butch.
Cops.
Duck, Miss Peters, there may be shooting.
Yeah, she ain't ducking, but I am behind her. Go ahead, shoot, copper. Hit this dame. See if I can.
No, don't.
Inspector, don't shoot. You'll hit the girl.
You mean to kill the girl, don't you? She makes a nice target, doesn't she, Inspector? A nice target, but a better shield.
Don't
Your
shoot.
Pals ought to see you now, Butch. If you were as tough as you claim to be, you wouldn't be holding that girl in front of you.
Cut the talk, pal. Go ahead and shoot, why don't you?
You know I'm not going to shoot.
Polite cop, huh? You don't shoot ladies, huh? Well, you don't shoot me, neither. And you don't catch me, because a couple of more steps back... Then I can reach the door.
You did this all wrong, Inspector.
Shut up. Well, I'm at the door, Faraday. Go ahead and shoot if you want. This is your last chance. So long. So long, copper. Here's your girlfriend. Maybe you'll stop.
Go to sleep, Butch. Get tired.
Blackie.
Yes, Inspector. Blackie with a blackjack.
Are you all right, Miss Peters?
Yes, thank you. I think my arm's going to be bruised tomorrow.
I think Butcher's head is bruised a bit, too. Or maybe this blackjack got the worst of the deal. Faraday, it's a good thing you told the guard to let me go in an hour.
Yes?
I knew where you were heading and stayed out there in the hall to wait for you. I imagine you heard Heather's confession.
Sure. You heard him admit he killed Ellie Spry and his lawyer.
Yes, and it's a good thing I was outside the door. Faraday, what would you do without me?
I don't know. But I'd sure like to try.
Don't do it, pal. You're a big man on account of me.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. The morning papers are going to say that Butch Heathers is another of the feathers in your cap.
Makes it so much better. Enhancements by Dave Binkley.
I pray you
Esquire. Here it is. That kind of show. We're not that kind of show.
Yeah, it seems to be nice.
So I'm going through the drawer next to me, along with the slide whistle. There's an external drive, John Lennon sunglasses with Pete signs on them, a patch for a Big Ed Big Daddy Roth, came with my Rat Fink statue, a deck of Spider-Man cards, a Duncan yo-yo. Yep.
Oh, it's quite a collection there.
That's just one little
no
drawer.
Kidding. Oh, they're squeezing the life out of that organ. I mean, they were getting everything out of that instrument.
Yes.
I kind of have a moral for this one, Dale, sort of.
Let's hit it quick, because time's a-wasting, and we got one more to squeeze in. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. Always make sure the next time you pick up a hitchhiker, you give them the mirror test. It could save you a lot of trouble. That's it.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it was.
That's what I said, yeah.
Just enough time to get our Quiet Please episode in. It's called Summer Goodbye. It's show number.
Oh, I got to look that up. Summer Goodbye. It is show number 84. It comes to us from January 23rd of 1949.
Yes, indeed.
Quiet, please.
Okay.
Quiet, please. The American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for today is called Summer Goodbye. The last stoplight, the last traffic light, is where Sepulveda Boulevard crosses Ventura at Sherman Oaks. The next one's nearly 40 miles northwest at Camarillo. So we felt pretty sure there'd be nothing to stop us for a long time. And even though they weren't very far behind us then, I knew most of the side roads. I wasn't sure they did.
Uh-oh.
I thought of the road that branches off the Hidden Valley Road that goes the other way from Lake Sherwood. I thought of the East Potrero Road that goes down to the Coast Road, finally lead deviously over through the sand dunes of Onami. I was afraid they might know that way. And then I remembered Las Verhenas Canyon. I remember the little house way up under the hills, the place we used to call Shangri-La. And I was sure they wouldn't know that place. Now, you need a place to hide out in. And the back of your car is loaded down with two satchels full of money that used to belong to somebody else. And there's bright, fresh blood on the handle of one of them. Last days of summer in California. The time when you know it's summer goodbye. When the rains are sweeping down from the northwest where they've been gathering up over Juan de Fuca, drenching the forests in the north, turning to snow over the high Sierras, drifting southward to kiss summer goodbye and turn the long brown hills into green pastures. When the little brooks would fill up and overflow their banks, the sleepy Los Angeles River would come to life again down in the valley. Roads would disappear in the mud. The last days of summer. Then I knew if we could hide away somewhere till the rains came, it'd be hard put to follow us. Maybe there'd come a day when we could pull out again. And that money that used to be somebody else's would be ours. Madeline's and mine. And not in California either.
Raining up in the Ridge Rockin' Bowl. We get it almost any day now.
It certainly doesn't look like it now, does it?
Well, you can't tell in California.
The sooner the better.
That's right. The way it's been all summer. We get up in the canyon there, you know. I'm afraid of fire.
Yeah, we had no fires all summer.
It only takes one.
Turn around and see if you can see anybody.
No. Nobody. I think they got tied up in the traffic back there at Van Nuys Boulevard.
Yeah, I hope so.
Me too.
Keep a sharp eye out for motorcycle cops, too.
What a joke if we got stopped for speeding.
I feel sorry for anybody that tries it.
Me too. I wonder what about that one that was carrying the satchel.
Nothing to wonder about.
I guess not. I got my hands all dirty from that satchel, too.
You can wash when we get up there.
I hope there's nobody up there.
So do I. Be too bad if there is.
Noel, if we can get out if it starts to rain.
Hope so.
That wall will probably go all to pieces.
Well, all the better for us.
Oh, I wouldn't want to get stuck.
We won't. Take another look back.
Nobody yet.
Well, I think we're getting away from it. If we don't get stuck behind a truck or something.
Be careful, you're doing 75.
Well, I have to do better than that.
How much farther? Where we turn off, I mean.
Oh, 4, 5, 6 miles, maybe more. Not throw it there over to Canoga Park?
Listen, Noah. Hear anything?
What?
Silence.
I hear them. Long ways off, though. Hang on, we're going places.
I hope we don't blow a tire.
Don't cut it out. Fat chance.
What?
Hitchhiker, see him? Blue denim pants, khaki shirt.
Take the next turn, mister.
Yeah.
You're going awful fast, Noah.
Well, so are the boys behind us.
Noah.
What?
What do we do if they catch up with us?
They won't catch up with us.
But what if they do?
Well, if they grab us.
Well?
They'll top us.
Top us? What do you mean?
Up on a platform with a rope around our necks, honey. Pull the platform out from under us.
Honey?
Yeah, that's what they do to people that murder other people, honey.
I didn't murder anybody, Noah.
You were with me when I did.
But...
You didn't try to stop me. You grabbed the satchel he was carrying.
My hands. I didn't have a chance to wash them. I wish...
Wish what?
Another hitchhiker.
Yeah, it looks just like the one we just passed. Wish what?
What?
Wish what?
Oh, I wish we hadn't done it.
You want to keep on living in that shack down on Temple Street?
I wish we hadn't killed him.
Yeah, we had the honey. We wanted the money. He didn't want us to have it. Forget it.
I can't forget it. No, I think they're getting closer.
Can you see them?
There's too many curves in the road.
We'll be at Brent's Junction in a minute where we turn off.
Well, what if they follow us?
I don't think they will if they don't see us turn. They'll get right on out Ventura Boulevard.
Well, if they stop and ask somebody.
Well, if they follow us. Is that gun loaded?
You only fired one shot.
I'll see the safety's off.
We're really gonna fight it out if they...
Well, there's nothing else to do, honey. We're dead pigeons anyway.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
To die.
We won't die, baby.
Die with the
stomach. We won't die. Look, there's the turnoff.
They're closer, too, Noel.
Hang on. Here we go. Out of the way there, Mac. These hitchhikers, the woods is full of them.
Poor fellas.
Listen, if you're going to feel sorry for anybody, feel sorry for us.
I know, but they all look so...
They all look alike. Blue denim pants, khaki shirts.
No.
What?
I was just thinking. Suppose they stop and ask one of those hitchhikers.
They won't. Hey, wait a minute.
What are you going
to
do?
Talk to that fella a minute. Hand me the pistol.
No.
Shut up.
Are you going
to... Stick your head out and yell at him.
Yell what?
Ask him to come here. I think we're going to pick him up.
No, you're not.
Do what I tell you.
Where is he?
Back up a little ways.
I don't see him, Noel.
He was right there. He was standing by that live oak tree.
Well, he's gone.
Well, he can't. Listen.
No, we can't wait. Go on.
But if he...
Go on. They're right behind him.
Hang on to your hat, baby. We made it around the corner at Brent's Junction. Down the last Bahamas Canyon Road. As we passed the big yellow sign, no smoking or fires beyond this point, we heard the sirens of the police cars screaming their way on up Ventura Boulevard away from us. And we breathed a long sigh of relief. Slowed down at last to a respectable 30 miles an hour in the dust among the sunflowers. Down the winding road, past the alfalfa fields and the side road that leads down to the creek. Down the winding road, past the steep little path that leads up the Las Trajenas schoolhouse. sedately on past the barn where the dog comes out and bites at your tires. Down the winding road under the trees to the clump of eucalyptus at the corner of Clarence Brown's ranch. And sharp turn left past the high wire fence to the clump of scrub oak where you turn off across the fields at the bottom of the hill up to Shangri-La. Around through the willows, down through the sandy little creek bed that's a roaring torrent when it rains, across the fields, and take down the bars and the gate, up toward the hill, through the woods to Shangri-La.
Look, Noel.
What?
My gracious, are there hitchhikers everywhere?
Way up here, too. Where's he going? There's nothing up this way except the house at Shangri-La.
He's got the same kind of uniform on.
Blue Levi's, khaki shirt, no hat.
No, wait, stop.
What's the matter?
Listen, Noel, what if it's the same man?
What? You're crazy. How could he?
I don't know how he could, but if he's a policeman or something.
I'll take the gun.
You're going to pick us up? You're going to stop?
I'm going to stop.
Stop where you're going, boy!
No good. No good. We're stuck. Listen, go on up there and get that fellow to come and give us a hand, will you, Madeline?
What if he...
Tell him we'll give him a ride.
Well, all right.
Hurry up. The longer we sit here, the deeper we'll be in the sand here.
All right.
Make it snappy. I want to get out of here. I'll give him a ride, all right. You think if I can get him and Madeline to push...
No.
Now what?
No.
Yeah, what's the matter?
He's gone.
What?
He's gone. I can't find him anywhere. He was standing right here by the big rock and there isn't a sign of him.
I was scared, too. You think not? Well, try it yourself sometime. Try murdering a man in broad daylight. Try carrying away two satchels full of money with a dozen people watching you. And try racing across the countryside with a frightened woman in a fast car and three carloads of cops right behind you. Get stuck in the sand 20 miles from no place. Somebody watching you and then disappearing when you go looking for him. Sure. Yeah, sure, you'll be just as scared as I was. Late summer afternoon, hot and lazy. The smell of eucalyptus trees around you, not a sound to reach you. Not a sound except the scrape of the shovel as you dig and dig and dig at the sand that keeps shifting under the wheels. And your wife standing there with a gun, keeping watch for you to know who. And the afternoon shadows growing longer and longer, and a little breeze coming up to rustle the leaves and make you think you don't know who's creeping up on you. Ready to throw down a gun on you and say, come out with me, kids, let us hang you for robbery and murder. And you know all you want is to get up there to that deserted old house and stash away the satchels of money and just lie low till the rains come and a copper stay in the station house. And the curtain of rain hides you as you creep out and up the highway to a boat that's going to take you and the money and her away someplace where they'll never, never, never find you.
That's it. That wraps it up. We got the end of part one of Quiet Please,
part one.
Summer Goodbye.
That was part one.
Yep, part one.
Part one.
Where's my...
At my expense.
Part two to... What's that?
Blog Talk having fun again at my expense. I had to call me.
Oh, yes, yes. Yep, you had to call yourself.
Yes.
Thanks, Blog Talk.
Thanks a lot, kid.
Oh, my. Thanks, Blog Talk.
That's right.
Thank
Don't
you
let us
for
turn
using
CW
Blog Talk
loose
Radio.
On you. You've had it.
Ah, yes.
She's our secret
what
weapon.
Was that? Oh, okay.
Yes, it's my secret identity. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. We will make you call yourself. Goodbye.
Yes, especially if you, it's your computer that has the radio station. We will torture you.
Yes, and I still...
We will punish you.
Yes,
we will not let
Blog
your
Talk
customers
radio.
Call Direct Connect. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Naughty, naughty Blog Talk. Come now. You still don't have the Direct Connect button on your site there. Even when you have the
chat room.
Still
not there. At least they took down the exciting notice saying that it was there.
That's true. We got just enough time to wrap this one up. Here comes the exciting conclusion of Quiet Please.
Well, you got plenty to think about while you're digging and the shadows crawl on the hillside towards you. You wonder if you'll ever be done and get out of there. Want to try it sometime? You don't, friend. Well, I guess everything's got to end sometime, and at last the back wheel's free, and you get back in, and you ease yourself out of there. And it's dark now as you take that winding little trail up between the hills. It's so hard to see, even in the daytime.
Feeling that there's somebody watching us, Noel.
Listen, you keep your ideas to yourself. This is tough enough in the dark.
Well, I wish you'd turn the bright lights on.
And have everybody within 20 miles seeing
them. You said nobody lives up here.
Yeah, we'll be all right with these lights. You can't get off the trail.
Unless we fall down the hillside.
We won't fall.
Keep feeling somebody's watching.
Will you cut it out?
Sorry, I'm scared.
Well, there's nothing to be scared of.
I know, that's what...
A deer. Deer all around here.
Oh, his eyes and the light. They look like...
I know what they look like.
Somebody's staring at
it. It was only a deer.
How much farther is it, Noel?
Only a little way now. You remember this turn, don't you?
I don't remember anything except I'm tired and cold and hungry.
I'll give you something to remember when we're living on some nice, warm island down the South Pacific somewhere. 6,000 miles away from here.
If we ever get there.
What'd you say?
If we ever get there.
We'll get there.
No.
Well?
Do you think that hitchhiker could be a cop?
Nah.
Well, who was he?
Some bum. Listen, that wasn't the same guy. You crazy?
Oh, I don't know. He sure looked the same.
Well, that's silly. How could he get ahead of us all the time? I was doing 75, 80 miles an hour. He was walking.
Maybe.
I can't hear you.
I said maybe he was walking.
You're crazy, Madeline.
Well, maybe he had a motorcycle or something.
Well, how could he get past us? We'd have seen him if he passed
us. Maybe he knew some shorts.
Oh, cut it out.
Look out.
Cut. Just a snake in the road.
Did you run over?
Yeah.
I heard it's bad luck to kill a snake.
Kill a snake, it brings rain. That's what we want.
I hate to see the summer go away.
Not me. Summer, goodbye. That's what I say. And good riddance. I want rain.
I wish I'd get there.
Yeah. That's just up this little slope, honey. Yeah, now we can rest.
I'm worn out.
Me too.
We've had a day.
I'll say.
I sure want some coffee.
No coffee.
Why not?
Fire. Gonna build a fire up here.
Why? Try to set the grass on fire? Right about that sign?
What sign?
Sign that said no smoke and no fire, see, on this place.
No, not bad. Somebody might see it. Anyway, do you ever see a brush fire up here in the canyon?
No.
Well, you don't want to see one, believe me.
I guess not.
There's only this one road to get out, see?
I know.
And we drive right into the hands of the cops.
Yeah.
After it rains, it'll be all right.
Doesn't feel much like rain now. Say, isn't this the place?
Oh, I think it's a couple of hundred yards more. No, wait.
See, is that rock shaped like a bell?
Sure, that's right. My gosh, I nearly got lost.
Well, you can go much farther. The canyon ends right past the house.
Sure. Hey, looks different here at night.
Hope nobody's up here, Noel.
There isn't anybody. Don't worry.
I don't know. That fella was so...
Ah, forget it, will you? Yeah, this is good. We'll park here. You go ahead and unlock the door. I'll get the stuff out and bring it up. Flashlight in the glove compartment.
You go unlock it.
Scared?
Well, I...
Ah, but...
All right, I'll try.
Go ahead, honey. We're all alone here. And this will be all over in a couple of days, and it's a hope for the South Pacific. Go ahead. I'll be right behind you.
All right.
Watch out for snakes.
I will. No.
What's the matter? Where's that gun?
What's
the matter? Is there somebody?
No! The house!
It's gone! The house is gone, I said. The house is gone, she said. And the house was gone. I saw it 3.5 months before, and it was there. Little frame cabin, 3 rooms, a little porch and a chimney, big as life. I know it was there then. But in the darkness, that night, it was gone, friend. Oh, no, I checked it with a lone eucalyptus tree that stood alongside the porch. The tree was there. The house was gone. There wasn't the slightest sign that the house had ever stood there. Nothing dug up, no debris of any kind, no sign there'd ever been a house there. In the dim starlight, in the middle of the night, my wife and me, looking at it, me holding a satchel full of money in one hand and a loaded cocked pistol in the other. And top that, friend. Madeline started to cry. Well, I'll be...
You took us to the wrong place.
I wonder if I... No, I couldn't have. I know every inch of that trail, Madeline. You recognize the rock that looks like a bell yourself, didn't you?
Didn't I what?
Recognize it.
I thought I did. Where's the house?
I don't know. Somebody must have torn it down and taken it away.
Doesn't look as if there ever was a house here.
And you can't see in the dark. This is the place, all right. This is Shangri-La, Madeline.
I'm scared. Let's get out of here.
Get out of here and go where, darling?
Oh, no. Why did we do it?
Oh, for the love of... Here, give me that flashlight.
I can't.
Give me that flashlight. What's that over there?
Where?
Looks like somebody's had a campfire here. Yeah, that's what it is.
No, let's go.
That'll fire gold. Old fire. The people that tore down the house probably built it to burn up rubbish. That's why we don't find anything.
I'm scared, Noah.
Shut up.
What are we going to do?
There's nothing else to do. Go back and sleep in the car.
With those bags? And the one of the blood?
Blood. And the money, baby.
I won't be able to sleep a week.
You said you were so tired.
I fitted to sleep on a bunk in the house. No, what became
of it? It's been torn down, I told you. You talk as if I owned it or something.
Well, I don't go for it.
Look, sweetheart. We're 2 jumps ahead of the cops. We're loaded with 2 bags of money. They saw us knock off that guard. What do you want to do? Go to a hotel up in Santa Barbara? Don't be a jerk.
I'm sorry. I'm making a fool of myself, no.
That's a good kid. That's a good kid.
I hope we don't have to stay here very long.
It'll rain. Any day now. Summer's over, baby. Now, come on back to the car. I'm out on my feet.
I
wonder who it was tore that place down.
I hope it wasn't that man we saw.
Cut it out. He's 1,000,000 miles away from here.
Well, I hope.
the rifle shot. I wonder...
Please.
Get in the car, Maddie.
I don't...
Get in the car.
I told you that,
Maddie. Cut it out. I don't hear anything. Maybe it's somebody out taking a pot shot at the deer.
I tell you...
Get inside the car.
No, I don't want
to. You heard me. If anybody... What?
Look. On the hill behind you.
What? Where? Slope of the hill above and behind us. Mist was drifting over the stars, but I couldn't mistake him. Khaki shirt, blue Levi's, no hat. Rifle in his hand. I shouted at him, but he didn't even look down at me. He raised his rifle. Fired. Immediately, there was an answering shot from somewhere off of the hills below us. Madeline was lying alongside the car, crying. I stood there. Just stood there, unable to move. And he started down the hill toward us. And then a sudden flurry of shots in the distance. And like a character in an old-time silent movie, he stumbled and fell down the hill toward us. I could see the spreading stain across his khaki shirt in the starlight. I took a step toward him. He didn't even look at me. Painfully. Oh, so painfully, he drew himself up on his knees. Aimed the longest time. And fired one shot.
Madeline!
Madeline, I yelled. And all I could hear in the dark was her bubbling, rasping breath. And when I reached her, her sweater was black with blood. She could only gasp. I raised the pistol and aimed it at the man who had murdered my wife. And I pressed the trigger once, twice, three, four times. The man stood up again, and I saw the bullets hit him in the starlight. But he didn't even cringe. Silently, deliberately, he reached in his pocket, pulled out a match, and struck it. Bent down to set fire to the summer dry grass. And in half a second, the scene was bright as day. The racing fire roared at me. I hardly had time to snatch up Madeline and hurry into the car. Straight away back where we came from. There was nothing else to do. Down the twisting canyon trail of power pursuit. I drove faster and faster. After a time, the car was made a devastating fire was leaping at it. Down through the pass. Down to the Sandy Creek bottom. Fire always at our heels. And then, just as we crossed the creek, the rain began. The blessed rain that was to have saved us. Now that we'd bidding goodbye to summer. And at the corner, and by the ranch, the police car was waiting. And Madeline was dead. I told them, under their guns. And I could see they didn't believe me. I babbled about the rain, how it had put out the fire, how the house was gone. They laughed. And then when it was morning, when it was broad daylight, we went back up the canyon, up the twisting trail. But there was no sign of fire. Me and the police. And when we got there, in the daylight, there was the house. Just as it always had been. And there hadn't been any fire. Not the night before, anyway. One of the police officers told me about it. Remember, or maybe you don't, 27 years ago, there was a fellow murdered a couple up here in Las Cojones Canyon, he said. And he hid away up here. 27 years ago, he said. The posse came on him at night and they killed him. But he managed to set the grass on fire that night. It burned out the whole countryside, he said. He was a bad man, he said. Right up here. I remember him so well. A hitchhiker he was. Wore a pair of Levi's and a khaki shirt. Remember him very well, he said. So do I. Please story is Summer Goodbye. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And Kathleen Cordell played the part of Madeline. Music for Quiet Please is by Albert Brown. Now, Willis Cooper for a word about next week.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. My story for you for next week is called Northern Light.
And so, until next week at the same time, I'm quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet, Ernest.
That
rest of Quiet, Please. We'll be back tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, with a couple of more tales for you. Finding them right now. Inner Sanctum and Crisis. That's tomorrow.
Crisis, yeah.
6:30 Eastern. And then right after, if not recovered, there'll be a vault episode, I'm sure, of Horrible Horror, starring our pal Gar the Ghoul.
Yes, and I look forward to catching his vault shows.
Uh-oh, we lost CW.
Oh, well, we did, didn't we? Thanks, Blog Talk.
Yeah.
Thanks, Blog Talk.
One thing after the next.
Oh, there she goes. She says, she ain't your Blog Talk. Kick me off the line. Oh, she's back.
Maybe I shouldn't have used you as our threat, CW.
Yeah.
She's here in spirit. I see the line open.
Yeah, her line's open? Let me see.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's
here,
open.
I'll close it and open it again. You know, it's like rebooting.
Mm-hmm.
You there, young lady?
Oh, it's locked up on mine. Kind of. There we go.
Oh.
Is
how
she
doing,
there?
CW?
I don't see her. Wait, I think I hear her. Oh. What the heck?
Here's some weird hold music.
What? I never got hold music before.
I don't know. Well, folks, again, we'll be back.
Hello?
Are you back?
I think
I'm back.
Can you hear me?
Well, yeah, we heard some weird music, but you're back now. Good. Like this ridiculous sound. Anywho, I reminded the folks that tomorrow we've got Inner Sanctum and Crisis with two more hitchhiking tales, The Hitchhiking Corpse and Night Rider. And no, it's not a talking car.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Aww.
Oh, I was going to say. Aww.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and the last time we did a hitchhiking show was back in, I think it was April of 2020. Let's
really?
We did hitchhiking before. Let me see when it was
we
in
did.
2020.
We did.
It was a ways back.
Well, that's a lot of thumb in it.
2020?
A lot of thumb in it.
Trying to find the show number. I don't know.
2020, we're all sheltered in place, all stuck in our caves.
Yes. I was down in my cellar. Gee, how unusual for me.
Well, it should be about time for Vince here, I think.
I think it is.
Oh,
we'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks again for listening.
Everybody.
Here's a latent and shortened version of events.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstein.
Regardless of Blog Talk.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Okay, so I went through some archives here. All right, and Hitchhiking Show was June 12th and June 13th of 2020, that weekend. And one of the artworks I made for the show was a clip. I cut out the back window from the hitchhiker scene from Twilight Zone of him leaning in the window. And I put my picture back in there, and then the other window was the Erie House ad to get, you know, to remind everyone this is Erie House, not just a cool thing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy your ads.
I know. I was getting ready to make one like that with all of us, in the, you know, trying to hitchhike and scaring the female driver, but I already kind of did that. I'll wait a while longer before I do that.
Yeah. And I'm wondering for tomorrow, I don't know if we have any time for it. It depends on the time frame. But I was just looking at information about hitchhiking, haunted hitchhiking in American folklore. A lot of interesting stuff about it. Dave was quite correct. There was both of you were quite correct. There's just a litany of stories of hitchhiking.
I think that would be cool if you would share some of those if you're joining us tomorrow.
Yeah, we will have time because we even have the one show's only like 21 minutes and the other one's 25 minutes. So we will have time. We even have all those listening in the archive, we even have a 5-minute clip from a Red Skelton 1939 show from Avalon about hitchhiking killers.
Ooh. Best kind.
Absolutely. I like this show that was the last one. I mean, it was kind of sort of, I mean, you have these two on the run, bank robbers and killers. It's akin to Jason meeting Freddy Krueger. I mean, who's the more evil of the two? It's Alien versus Predator. I love matchups like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
They met a more psycho killer than they were.
I don't know. The two guys from Fargo were pretty good.
Gotta clean out that wood chipper, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe that was actually based on a true, I mean, putting her in the wood chipper thing. Ew.
Yeah.
Ew. I mean,
that's when
warranty.
The Coen brothers caught my attention first.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you...
I like a lot of their films.
Yeah. I mean, after that, you can kiss your warranty goodbye on that wood chipper. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's, you know.
Oh, I don't even know if I brought this up with you before, CW. I know I've asked Dave a couple times to check it out, but, and once again, the name eludes me. It's another Coen Brothers movie, and it's an anthology of Western stories.
Ooh.
The Adventures of, what is it called? I'm going to have to start Googling here.
Buck.
And the guy who was the singer in Oh Brother,
Where Art Thou?
Yeah, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I know the one you're talking about.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Buster Scruggs.
And he plays Buster Scruggs in the first segment.
Good old Buster.
Kim, what the heck's his name? I forget his name, but he's in it.
Tim Blake.
Thank you, Blake. Tim Blake. Good singer. In the jailhouse now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got a pretty good twang to it. Yeah.
Yep.
A new guy named Ramblin' Bob. You steal, gamble, and rob, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Snappy little tune. Old timey music, you know. Old timey.
Yeah. I love the fact that George Clooney, who is the direct nephew of the late wonderful songstress Rosemary Clooney, said emphatically, the man can't sing worth a note. So apparently those genetics did not go anywhere near him.
Mm-mm. He did not inherit the vocal cords. Rosemary Clooney is timeless.
Yes, she must have gotten all that in the family litany.
Yep. But he's a fine actor. He does a good job.
Oh, yes, he does a wonderful, wonderful job, especially Dawn to Dusk. That is, I think, the only time he was ever really an out-and-out villain. And he did a wonderful performance. We're talking about, you know, Jimmy Stewart, only one-time villain, and, of course, Henry Fonda, Once Upon a Time in the West. That was not usually his forte, being a villain. And George Clooney, same thing. He is usually not in the monster villain role, but Dawn to Dusk, him and Quentin Tarantino, he was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a fun movie.
Very much so.
Cheech Marin makes an appearance in there.
Oh, yeah, along with Tom Savini.
Yes, Savini's in it. He plays one of the good vampires in there. And what's that other Hispanic fella? Oh, I love this guy. First
Danny
celebrity.
Trejo?
That, no. He was the first celebrity back in the MySpace days to actually, he talked to me, But he's a real good guy. He plays a tough, like usually a bartender or a biker or a long-haired guy.
MySpace really? MySpace, really?
MySpace,
really?
Yeah. Remember MySpace?
Holy cow.
Wow.
Back in those days. I was alive then.
Fred Flintstone?
I was old then.
Was Fred Flintstone? Was that where you hand-carved your data and then you put a floppy disk in the thingy?
Yeah, on my Rockman computer.
A Rockman computer.
Rockman.
And then when you got online, put your phone in that funny phone cradle that fit, and then you heard the squelch.
It was connected by a piece of string, a tight piece of string.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't they call that Netscape?
Something like that. Oh, gee. Good one.
Netscape Navigator, there you go.
Ouch.
There you go.
Good jab.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, six stories in Ballad of Buster Scruggs. I urge both of you, if you get a chance, to see it. Liam Neeson's in it. He plays in one of the...
Hispanic
fella I'm thinking of is Danny Trejo. Oh, my God, I love Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
I think he's
that's
in
what I said, Danny Trejo.
I missed that. Yeah, I love him.
He's awesome. He was in... he did a special walk-on on the series What We Do in the Shadows. He was part of the Vampire Council. And he is, of course, he was in the movie Machete.
Oh, and I forget what it is. And it's a lower-budget film, but he plays almost like, he is. He's a horror host. He hosts Three Scary Tales. He's wearing like a top hat. And he's all creeped out, and that's great. And I can't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
I recently stumbled on it on Pluto, and when I saw it, I'm like, "Oh my God, Danny Trejo is a horror host. This is great."
Oh, I wouldn't mind meeting him. He's supposed to be a very nice fella.
Yeah, he actually spent time in prison, but he really works with rehabbing people in the joint.
Oh yeah, he. He's got a prison record, but unlike a lot of the Hollywood muckety-mucks, he owns up to it. Yeah,
he owned up to
it
and turned himself around, man, and became quite a guy.
Yeah.
That's why I like him.
Him and the other fellow, he was in Aliens number 3, Rock I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, it wasn't Hudson.
No, no, that's not that one.
Really?
Stop.
Flat fight with Homer? No. I like Danny Trejo because he looks like a badass. He's not a pretty boy at all. Most women that I've heard describe him as rugged, good looking. You know what I mean? A perfect character actor.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Let's see, Alien 3. Charles S. Dutton. That's him. Charles S. Dutton. That's the actor who is in Alien 3. He went to prison as well. Just like Mr. Trejo turned himself around. Okay, wonderful. Wonderful actor. Wonderful character actor. He was in Aliens 3. He was in that teleplay with Jack Lemmon called The Murder of Mary Fagan. So it was just fabulous. Fabulous performer. He did a Broadway, the stage play Equus. He was in that as well.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Nice.
But, yeah. But Danny Trejo, Danny Trejo reminds me of, what was it, Sig Haig? Is that the...
Well, they were, I believe they were somewhat friends. I know they got to work together a lot on the Rob Zombie films. Danny Trejo was in The Devil's Rejects, which, of course, had Sid Haig. Because Sid Haig was in a lot of Rob Zombie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Haig was awesome. Captain
Spaulding. Yeah, Quentin Tarantino liked him, too. He was in, he got a part in the movie Jackie Brown.
Yes.
Quentin Tarantino was a huge fan as well. Yeah.
Well, I think that was an homage in a way to Sid Haig because early in his career he was in a lot of the exploitation movies.
Mm-hmm. It was. Most
Had
definitely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind meeting Quentin Tarantino either. Hey, Mr. Tarantino, you got a spot on your movie for me? I can just, be a piece of furniture in the background there.
Yeah, wouldn't be the first one to get killed. I want a splatter.
Yeah, splatter.
All over the screen.
Yeah, splat. then my credit will be splat number 4.
There you go.
In the credits. But definitely, I'm happy to share a little bit of folklore for tomorrow's show. And with that, I really have to get going now. So,
real quick before the great one comes on, another piece of trivia, real quick. I wonder if you know it. I stumbled on this, so I had to share it with you. The evil vizier in the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Okay, Ray Harryhausen movie. Do you remember the evil wizard in that movie? Do you
Tom
know
Baker?
Who that is?
Slightly. No.
Tom Baker?
Yeah.
Tom Baker, Doctor Who number 4.
Yes, which I understand is one of the most popular ones, is Tom Baker.
Oh, yes,
that.
Because he had this mountain of curly hair, big teethy grin, and he wore that incredibly long. Well, I had a Doctor Who scarf like that, but unfortunately at the time I had a cat in the palm there. So
yeah, in the scarf.
Yeah, in the scarf. Yeah. Yeah, one fine morning, scarf was in the living room, in the kitchen, and a couple other pieces, and cat was licking itself in the corner, and I was crying in the corner. My parents were saying, "What's wrong? What's this mess? Vacuum the floor."
But you don't understand.
It's scared that darn cat.
On that happy note.
Very good. Oh, yeah. Great. I'm going back in post-traumatic stressing over my Dr. Scarf. Mr. Grady.
I have that effect on people.
Yeah. play something nice, Mr. Durante, as we're going to say bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Toodaloo. Up we the day, and ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Calabash. Everywhere. Calabash is cooking corned beef and cabbage.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.